Right now, to these microphones, we go to Washington, D.C., to the man that takes care of the geopolitical for us, Ken Timmerman. You know, I was just looking over Ken Timmerman's bio on his website. Great website to go to. You should go to it sometime. Take a look at it. I believe it's kentimmerman.com. Real easy to remember. Ken, I'm just finding out that you were nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize.
Well, that's right. In 2006, along with Ambassador John Bolton, we were co-nominated for our work on Iran, John for his work on the Proliferation Initiative, and me for work over well over a decade in exposing Iran's covert nuclear weapons program.
Well, Ken, it's great to have you with us today. And after all these years and your understanding of the Mideast, that's why we bring you to these microphones, so that you can help us. Ken, the Iranian Navy just recently, and there's so much going on, but the Iranian Navy just recently said, we aim to destroy the United States Navy. What do you make of this?
Well, you know, the Iranians like to bluster. They boast of capabilities that they don't have. They boast of weapons that exist only on paper. But it's absolutely crystal clear that they want to destroy the U.S. Navy. I mean, there's no doubt about their intentions. They would love to destroy the United States. They constantly talk about this. Even their new so-called moderate president has supported all of the regime goals, which include destroying Israel and destroying the United States. Just recently, this interview that you're referring to from the head of the Iranian Navy, Ali Fadavi, the head of the Revolutionary Guards Navy, he talks about new weapons that they have, including an ultra-rapid torpedo that they have developed with help from Russia, that they claim would be able to sink a U.S. aircraft carrier within 50 seconds. I have not seen any confirmation that they indeed have that torpedo, but they have a very close arms relationship with the Russians. They have all sorts of missiles that they've purchased from the Russians, including cruise missiles. So it's not beyond the realm of the possible. They could indeed have that torpedo, and if they do, it clearly poses a threat to the United States Navy, including to our aircraft carriers. There's no doubt about it.
Where are we standing right now with Iran and their threat on the coastline of Israel?
Well, the Iranians are gradually extending the range of their Navy. Over the past couple of years, they have engaged in blue water exercises. Now, this hasn't been a huge armada, okay? They've sent a destroyer or a frigate out with a couple of supply vessels. But they are trying to show that they can send warships beyond the Persian Gulf, out beyond the Arabian Sea, and even into the Suez Canal and into the Mediterranean. Now, I don't think that's a terribly big threat. I think the bigger threat from Iran is them using a cargo ship, an ordinary cargo ship, and putting a missile launcher on the cargo ship in the hold. That, I think, is a much bigger threat, much harder to detect, and it's something that the Iranians have actually practiced doing in the Caspian Sea. I would say that rather than their conventional Navy, I'm much more worried about their unconventional capabilities, whether it's these special torpedoes that they have in the Persian Gulf, Revolutionary Guards, ultra-fast speedboats. I mean, these are boats that can go 50, 60 knots, very, very fast, go-fast boats, and swarming techniques, which they have also been practicing for a number of years, where they would literally swarm a U.S. warship, a destroyer, so we would not know which boat to hit, which boat was the missile, if you wish. They practiced doing this, loading a ship with, loading one of these go-fast boats with explosives. Mm-hmm. So if we are swarmed, if one of our ships is swarmed with, say, 50 or 60 or 100 of those go-fast boats, they won't know which one to hit.
That's another reason for us to keep an eye on what's taking place in the Mideast and in this new war of terrorism and the new tactics that they are using in terrorist attacks in Israel and other countries and other partners in the peace process. Going closer to a neighbor to Israel, Egypt. Egypt's al-Sisi vows to finish off the Muslim Brotherhood if elected. Do you think that this is a vow that he can fulfill?
Well, that's a very good question. And al-Sisi, who was considered a devout Muslim when he was the head of the armed forces, he was considered to be someone who had a good relationship with the Muslim Brotherhood. He has now turned against them 180 degrees, vowing to destroy them completely. He passed a decree. He signed a decree earlier in the year that banned demonstrations outright in Egypt. Mm. So he's up for election later this month. Everybody is banking on his election. There's not much doubt that he will be elected in a wide margin by the Egyptian people. And I expect him to continue this crackdown. Now, the Muslim Brotherhood has showed itself to be quite resilient. Mm-hmm. They have existed underground for decades. And it's really only been the past 10 years or so that they've, 10 to 15 years, that they have been above ground, if you wish, with a public presence. So I think that they have a capability of going back underground, and then you would have a long sort of twilight war between the Egyptian authorities chasing down the Muslim Brotherhood where they can find them, and the brothers then striking the Egyptian government through terrorist attacks.
In this process, what do you think the average man in Egypt would like to see happen?
Well, my feeling in Egypt has always been that the Egyptians are kind of a happy-go-lucky people. They put up with enormous hardships with a brave face, everyday hardships. I mean, you know, they just go through Cairo and you see the number of sewage breaks on the streets. And there, it's a country still of extraordinary poverty, and the Egyptians put up with that. I think they would like to see more food on the table, more prosperity, and they'd like to see the Muslim Brotherhood go away. Now, you certainly have supporters of the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt. I'm not trying to diminish that. And Islam is powerful. You have the oldest university in the Muslim world in Cairo, in Al-Azhar. So it's profoundly rooted in the society, but I think what you're seeing now, this backlash against the Muslim Brotherhood because of their use of terrorism, because of Mohamed Morsi, the president who was deposed by al-Sisi, Morsi's alignment with the Muslim Brotherhood around the world and their goal to reestablish the Islamic Caliphate, I think that's something that ordinary Egyptians do not aspire to do. They have no interest in that. They would like Egypt to go back being a normal, ordinary country at peace with her neighbors, including, obviously, Israel, and to be in the good graces of the United States.
Mm. Staying in the Middle East, let's take a look. There's a report that just came out recently that there are more, a growing number of Americans in the Middle East civil war. Now, I just returned from Jordan. Our guide was a Jordanian guide from Iraq. He had grew up and educated in Baghdad as a school teacher, left and came to Jordan. But he has a lot of friends and a lot of family that are in Syria right now. He was telling us that the terrorists that are there, those that are going against Bashar Assad's military, that they're paying these men over $1,000 a day to fight in this civil war. What can you tell us about the growing number of Americans in the Middle East?
Well, certainly the FBI is beginning to track people from various Middle Eastern countries in the United States, in other words, recent immigrants from the Middle East who have gotten their U.S. citizenship or have green cards and then go back to fight the jihad. And the FBI is concerned that these individuals, whether they're of Palestinian origin or Egyptian origin or Saudi origin, that they will come back to the United States and bring the terrorist tactics and techniques that they have learned in Syria with al-Qaeda, that they'll bring them back to the streets of the United States. This is a serious threat. I don't have any hard numbers on how many people that you're looking at. The press reports talk about 6,000 to 7,000 foreign fighters in Syria, but that's people from all over the world. We don't know how many Americans there are. There have been some very prominent ones, like Abu Ghait, Soleiman Abu Ghait, who was the spokesman for al-Qaeda, who is now under arrest in the United States. But we really don't know how many Americans are in Syria today being trained in the global jihad.
One last issue for you to address for us, the report that North Korea has nuclear warheads for missiles. What's your take on this?
Well, an extremely disturbing report from the Defense Intelligence Agency that apparently the Obama administration has been poo-pooing and trying to ignore in public. And they have actually gone to the extraordinary, they've taken the extraordinary measure of denying this report in public, even though it was released officially by the Defense Intelligence Agency, and kind of adding to that confusion or that dispute, if you wish. Just recently, you had the resignation of the general in charge of the Defense Intelligence Agency and his deputy. They both resigned. We're told that they resigned because of disputes over policy, and it sounds like this could be one of them. If North Korea has miniaturized weapons, we know they have missiles that can reach the United States, and the dispute has been whether they're able to make those warheads small enough to go on top of these missiles. The Defense Intelligence Agency says they have moderate confidence that the North Koreans have already developed this capability. And here's the kicker, Jimmy, is that if the North Koreans have it, the Iranians have it, because the North Korean missile program, the North Korean nuclear weapons program, is a joint program with the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Folks, that's why we have Ken Timmerman with us on the radio. Not only is he established, and he's been many years in the Mideast and has an understanding of that area, but he's able to bring all these things. And Ken, thank you so very much for joining with us today.
Thank you, Jimmy. God bless.